The next train at platform 2 is for Bath.
China's Great Wall. India's Taj Mahal. Petra in the desert sands of Jordan. The Roman Colosseum. These places capture our imagination like few other destinations on Earth. Together with their brethren, Brazil's Christ the Redeemer, Peru's Machu Picchu, and Mexico's Chichen Itza, they form the seven wonders of the world. A lifetime of bucket list destinations. But what if you didn't need a lifetime to see them all? What if you could see every world wonder in just 1 week? That's exactly what today's guest did. In the process, he set a new Guinness World Record, and he's here today to tell us why. Welcome back to the Get Lost podcast. I'm your host, Joe Sills. I'm a freelance journalist for outlets around the world. Today's guest is another world traveler, but this one is a superhero with an alter ego who's cycled from Thailand to the UK. He's run across Canada and the United States. He's spent days upon days on a stationary bike and a treadmill, and he's the author of Adventure Man. Anyone can be a superhero. His name is Jamie McDonald, also known as Adventure Man, and he's a brand new Guinness World Record holder for visiting the seven wonders of the world in just 7 days. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Yeah, that is quite the intro. I feel like I need a cape or something, Joe.
Well, I feel like you do have a cape, but I don't know if you need a phone booth or something to go get it.
Yeah, we're missing the phone booth.
Yeah, well, I hear if you're in the UK, you guys got a lot of phone booths, although I think they're like defibrillator stations now, right?
That's true. To be honest, where I live in Gloucester, all we have is the cheese roll hill.
Are the ones that do the cheese roll.
Yeah. We literally roll a massive piece of cheese down a hill. It's practically like a cliff. Everyone chases after it and then they break their arms and legs.
Have you participated in this?
I have. I'd like to say I went for it and I 100% committed. But I was a bit of a wussy. I hit a certain age, like 23 years old, when I had a crack at it. I thought, if I really go for this, I'm definitely going to break a leg. Yeah. So I kind of hesitated. But if you're going to be the first person down the hill and you're going to win the cheese, you've got to commit. And there's a guy, annoyingly, who wins every single year because he somehow trains. And trains to become the best.
How do you train to run down a cliff and not break your leg? Or does he just have a bunch of broken bones?
No, he's got this amazing knack where he like falls and you're like, oh, he's a goner. He's a total goner. And then suddenly he gets back up on his legs and then they go like super fast, like the fastest legs you've ever seen. And then he like falls again. I don't know. He's got this knack. And I think he knows the route. He knows the exact route to take every time.
Does he have like a lifetime supply of cheese at this point?
Oh, he barely has to like work. I mean, he's got so much cheese. He doesn't need to eat anything else. He's just got cheese.
This is a dream
like,
for me.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Wow. Jamie, let's talk about Adventure Man. I love that you have this superhero. You are a superhero. Talk to me about where the idea for Adventure Man came from, or in some cases, like, how did you meet? I mean, was there a moment where you just walked into a pub one day and said, oh my God, I feel different?
Good question. I mean, quite the story, really, to get to the point of I've got my own superhero suit called Adventure Man. But probably about 10 years ago, Joe, I saved up £20,000 to buy a house.
All right. Logical.
Yeah, exactly. All my friends, family, they're all buying houses too. So my brain is saying, right, get the house. And right at the last minute, I just got this gut feeling in my stomach. I just felt like something's not right here.
Hmm.
And you know that gut feeling?
Yeah, yeah. Like that you can't turn away from it, but something's not right and the path I'm on is not right. You got to change it.
Yeah. Yeah. And but you don't even know why. There's no reason to it, but it's just a feeling. And so exactly that. And with a feeling I had, I took some time out and then I just went back to the hospital where I spent most of my life. So I used to have like a rare spinal condition where sometimes I couldn't move my legs.
Wow.
Yeah, an immune deficiency, epilepsy. And so I was really, really sick. And when I was about 7 years old, the doctor explained that I was going to end up in a wheelchair. And my mum was there at the time. And when we left the room, she said, listen to me, don't you dare listen to a word of that. You're not going to end up in a wheelchair. And then when we got home, she put this piece of string in the back garden. And she said, Jamie, do you want to play tennis? And I remember feeling like, not really, Mum. Uh-huh. But I went out there and I started cracking the ball and I got this like love for movement. You know, when you throw a ball for a dog, Joe, and it's like, I've just got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like that for the space of like a whole year. I got a lot of help from the doctors and nurses and then all my symptoms gradually disappeared. So I got really, really lucky.
That's unbelievable. Do you think the movement had something to do with it, or was it just the drive to get you through that really difficult part of life?
That's a good question. I think I'm now a patron of a charity that helps kids and families with this condition. And mm-hmm. it's a fascinating subject and we still don't quite know the answer. But since I have met these amazing experts, and it's interesting that I have like this spinal condition, it's neurological. Mm-hmm. And the one sport that I took to, which is tennis, is amazing for your neurological system, the coordination and the ball work. So it could have been that. It could have also just been a load of luck and it just grew out. And so, real tough one. But you know, I'm very grateful that I've got a body that I can do anything I want with, you know, and yeah. So I kind of want to put it to good use all the time. Like I've got itchy feet and so I wanted to be like the next big Roger Federer when I was 16.
Yeah.
And I was in forehands and backhands, and my parents were really supportive. So they just let me work it out all by myself. But I was absolutely terrible at tennis.
Yeah. So like that wasn't exactly it for your movement fix.
No, you know, and so then I guess instead of getting the house, you know, I went back to the hospital. I started to look at kids in the same bed where I once was. Wow. You know, it was the most surreal experience. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at these kids and saying, I know what that's like. And I left there and I just thought, you know what? Like maybe there is more to life. And maybe I'm actually in a position that I can give back. So instead of buying the house, I bought a bicycle for £50 out of the newspaper. It was so bad, Joe. I mean, we're talking like $100 bike. I mean, it was bad.
Like off the wheels are like warped. The chain is rusty. The brakes like were once there, but are now just your feet.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a horrendous bike. The only thing that was pretty new and good is the bags that I had on the side of it with a new rack. And that was it. And so then I flew out to Bangkok, Thailand, and then attempted to cycle back to Gloucester, 14,000 miles, 25 different countries. I'd never cycled before. And the journey it took off, it ignited this power inside me of just adventure, traveling, making it meaningful, purposeful. You know, I mean, at one point I even got shot at on the Afghanistan border.
Wow.
You know, but so it was a wild
adventure. Who shot at you? Was it the Americans or?
No, those damn Americans.
I know my people.
Yeah. I was in a country called Tajikistan that borders Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So there was just some political thing that was going on. It's just wrong place, wrong time. Mm-hmm. You know, that out there it's a bit like the Wild West. So yeah, but managed to kind of make it out, and then weirdly, so then when I got into cycling Turkey, this is where the superhero thing started to kick in, right? Because I'm getting to the adventure man thing, but basically, one of my best mates, as a surprise, he flew out to a city in Turkey. Do you know what the name of the city was called, Joe?
I have no idea.
Batman.
Oh, Batman! No way! I've flown over Batman on the in-flight map, and I literally looked at my partner. I was like, "Babe, we're flying over Batman. Like, found him. What? Please tell me what is in Batman."
Well, actually, I do know what is in the city of Batman. So my best mate rocks up with a Batman and Robin outfit with him, right? I wear Batman, he wears Robin outfit, which I was really glad about because no one wants to be Robin.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Right, and then we pedal through the city of Batman thinking we're like the coolest superheroes ever, right? Then I'll tell you what lives in the city of Batman. This is no joke, the Batmobile actually showed up.
Before we get back to the show, I want to take just a few seconds to tell you about a place I recently had the chance to get lost at in person. Tortola. Jungle hikes lined with banana trees, a strange man at a mountaintop restaurant, and one of the best surf schools in the Caribbean could all be found there. It's the kind of place where you really need to spend more than just a few days hitting the most popular beaches on Instagram. Instead, I recommend setting up shop for a while with our newest show sponsor, Seascape Villas. Now, let's be clear. I happened upon this place by chance, and I really did stay there. In the Caribbean, reliable Wi-Fi and a quiet place to work from home can sometimes be hard to come by. And in peak season, rental cars can also be really difficult to find. But when I hopped off of the ferry from St. Thomas on Tortola's West End, Seascape Villas had an SUV ready for me at the dock. The condo itself made the perfect base, not only to explore Tortola from, but also to keep up with writing assignments and conference calls from as well. Sunset views couldn't be beat, and the entire place was affordable enough for a travel writer on a budget to splurge for a couple of nights. A fully equipped kitchen made cooking meals easy. Meanwhile, I was able to get some incredible R&R while island hopping across the Caribbean on assignment. So check out Seascape Villas on Airbnb or VRBO, or book directly at seascapevillasbvi.com. Tell them the Get Lost podcast sent you, and they just might hook you up.
So it's this huge, like, armor-proof, like guns on the top, like the biggest Batmobile. And we're like, what the hell is this? It turns out it was the terrorist police.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
They took our passports. They locked us in the back of the van. They genuinely thought we were terrorists.
What? They didn't understand that they're in Batman and you are Batman.
How can they not know that? So after a couple of hours, they obviously realized from Googling, you know, Jamie McDonald or whatever, that then I popped up and actually, they're just having fun, fundraising, whatever. But the weirdest thing is, Joe, no one in the city of Batman has any idea who Batman is. Well, maybe the world's caught up. This was in 2012, and it dawned on us that in the city of Batman, no, like, they don't know Batman.
That's amazing. What a great story. So that's how you get to the superhero element, and you leave Batman, and you're like, hey, I could just be a superhero all the time.
Yeah, well, that's it. Then I'd done more adventures. So, you know, when I got back, I sat on a stationary bike for 12 days nonstop to get the Guinness World Record, and my bum was really sore in that. And then I ended up getting a visa for Canada just to go on holiday. My butt needed a holiday, right? Yeah, after all that.
Canada, naturally.
Yeah, and then after those challenges, we managed to raise £20,000 for Gloucester Children's Hospital.
That's great.
And they invited me back, and they wanted to show me where the donations went and the difference it had made. And they built a new school playroom with the donations. And then on the way out of the hospital, they left me with the best gift of all, because there was two kids there holding a sign that said, "Keep going, Jamie."
Wow. Yeah.
And so Yeah, and my visa for Canada ended up coming in, and I just thought, God, it's weird as this is. Maybe I should just keep going. I still got money left over from the house that I didn't buy, so I sat on my mum and dad's toilet. I jumped off. I was like, Mum, Dad, I'm going to run across Canada. And I'll never forget my mum's face. She's like, I don't think that's a good idea. And then my dad, his vein was pulsating on the side of his head. He said, that's exactly what you should be doing. And so a week later, I'd never ran before. I just flew out and just started to run. And
wow. Wow. That's funny how my dad was like that too. And I started traveling solo all over the U.S. at first. My mom was just like worried to death. Dad was like, all right, son, you got this. Like, go for it.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Like that, each parent figure plays that role. I think I recently discovered that when the mum gives birth to their child, it opens up this amygdala inside their brain that then just sends fear. Right, so they just look at their baby, and everything around the baby is just fear, and they cannot control that fear. And they studies on it, and even if a gay couple ends up having a kid, when the baby arrives, one of those parents' amygdala will go boof, come out, and they will take that role of just I need to be fearful for my child, and the other parent of course just stays the same, like, just leave him alone, like, just carry on.
Like, it's fine. It's fine. And that's funny because you do get that parent dynamic in a lot of relationships, you know. That's interesting to me. So you've got Adventure Man. This is a thing now. In my mind, look, the Adventure Man, like, origin story was like, Adventure Man was found in the back of the Batmobile in the Turkish city of Batman. And then, like, you know, he was living in the Batmobile the whole time in the catalytic converter. And so you meet Adventure Man, and the children love Adventure Man. So here you are, you're running across Canada, and you complete that. At what point do you say, like, this is a permanent part of my identity?
Yeah, so I guess as I continued the run across Canada, then somebody, a kid actually with dyspraxia, created a proper Adventure Man suit for me to wear. So then I ended up running across America and then breaking the world record for running on a treadmill for 7 days to cover the...
Do you feel like Forrest Gump when you're doing that?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, you know, the more you run, the stronger you become. You know, I always thought it would be the opposite. The more you run, you just deteriorate. But actually, it's the mind that might deteriorate. But physically, you actually get stronger. And if you push through, then of course, emotionally and spiritually, you get stronger too. So then wearing the suit and accomplishing those things, I guess I do feel incredibly strong. I think it's important to share that I'm physically pretty pathetic, right? I'm, you know, if you put me against anyone in the fitness department, they would just destroy me. But my gift is that I can keep going. I can keep going no matter what. And I pride myself on, you know, keep going over anyone on the planet. And I also think we all have that as well. That's the really significant part, is I never really knew that I had it. It was only until I found my mission in life that then it ignited it. And then, you know, wow, you really can do anything. And I'm just so lucky, really, because then that, I guess my journey's led on to some other incredible adventures. And one of them is I ended up giving a talk in Dubai. So that's my day job, is speaking. At conferences, and I gave a talk to Travelport, and they listened to my story, and I'll never forget, they come up at the end and they said, you know, great talk, Jim, brilliant, but my God, you are the worst adventurer ever. Right?
That means you're great at it.
Yeah, I'm like, I really am. I'm terrible, right? I mean, I even, just to put context on it, I got lost in the Arizonian desert at the hottest time of year running across America. I mean, yeah,
how do you get lost? I'm in the Arizona desert right now at the hottest time of the year. It's horrible. If you go outside, it's like sticking your hand in an oven, but you cannot get out of the oven. It's like really dangerous.
It's rough. Yeah, I mean, the good thing is I physically couldn't run in the daytime, so I ran at night. So
okay,
I spent
good,
three months, you know, just basically finding an aircon place, normally a firefighter service or someone, and then I would just run through the night. So I lived this like tranquil monsoon thunderstorm 3 months of running. I mean, it was the most wackiest 3 months of my life.
It sounds beautiful though, in like this surreal way, like you become nocturnal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's weird. It's like you're progressing in life while the world is sleeping.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then you like wake up, it's or dawn comes, you're in another town, and then you sleep and then run again at night, dawn comes, you're in another town.
Yeah, and the sunrises where you are just outstanding. I mean, I love the desert look. I think it's the most beautiful scenery. I don't know if you feel that way,
but
as a boy, it's born in green stuff. You know, when I see the desert, I just think it's, you know, it's magnificent.
Yeah, it's the same for me growing up in Tennessee. It's all green and it's beautiful in its way. It's not dissimilar from England, though, other than it's a lot hotter. But you get a lot of oak trees and elm trees and willows and things like that. So it's very like similar to the parts of the UK I've been to. And then I come out west, which is why I spend so much time out here, because it's so inspiring to see like limitless horizon, you know?
Yeah.
And it's only like interrupted by these ancient geological formations that are older than the dinosaurs. And you just feel like the grain of sand in time that you actually are out here.
It's an amazing way of putting it.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Jamie, I want to talk to you about the Seven Wonders in 7 days, and you've done a good job of setting it up because you meet this company, Travelport. And just some background for everybody. Travelport is, the best way I know how to describe this is they are a software company that creates the programs that run travel portals, like, maybe not exactly, but like a kayak.com or an Expedia, or they power airlines websites and things. So there's like a software platform behind everything you use to book any kind of travel, and these people probably made it. Is that accurate?
That I would say that is a good crack. Yeah, basically, if you've ever used a travel agent and they go, hey, I'm going to go and book something for you as a flight and you know, a bus or whatever, they will then most probably be using Travelport's technology in order to book it all. And so they got a piece of software called Travelport Plus, and they basically wanted to put it to the ultimate test. It was like this new piece of technology that they wanted to put through the mill, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so they challenged me to attempt to set a new world record for visiting the seven wonders of the world in the fastest time.
How does this come about? Is this literally at that conference? Like you've done the speaking engagement and you're kind of talking afterwards and they're like, hey, we have this crazy idea.
It kind of came afterwards. It came out of the blue, you know, but they must have, I think what happened is once they realized that I was the worst adventurer on the planet, they're like, hang on a minute. Right. We've got this piece of technology to help the worst adventurer. And that looks like, if in the dating world, that just looks like a match, right?
right. Like you're this hapless adventurer that gets lost in the desert, and they're a company that helps people get from point A to point B.
Yeah, and in my world, I'm very just kind of gung-ho, and I'll start an adventure, and I'll know the starting point, and I'll know the ending point, and I might have a one-year visa or whatever to do it, but I'll just go for it. I won't plan a single sausage of the entire trip because it's just not in my nature, right? I finally got to a place in my life where I just put my hands up and go, right, that's just the way I'm built. I try and get a bit more kind of planned and takes a bit of pressure off, but I just am the way I am. So when they said you need to do this Seven Wonders trip, and then as it's evolving, right, I suddenly realized 43 pieces of transport of travel all need to go right, and that would be my worst nightmare of planning something like that. Like I just couldn't. I'm actually sweating just thinking about it.
It's like anxiety inducing to have to meet these certain, probably like be here, be there deadlines. This like rigid schedule, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So they gave me a travel agent using the technology. So that kind of took the pressure off. So it was like, right, okay, now I just need to go and I can do my thing and point, you know, and I need to just make sure I get to every single piece of, you know, destination, really. Mm-hmm. We started off in the Great Wall. Have you ever been to the Great Wall?
No, yeah. I've been to Shanghai, but I've never been up to the Great Wall because I think it's closest to Bangkok, right? Not Bangkok, Beijing.
Beijing, yeah. Yeah, Shanghai is amazing as well. Great city. But stroke of luck, but just before the adventure started, we discovered that there was a hotel that lived in the complex of the Great Wall.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing. Right. I've got to stay there because it's the closest thing to the Great Wall. And once I leave the Great Wall, that's it. The clock starts. So
to paint the scene, they give you the seven wonders of the world, which are Great Wall of China, it's the Roman Colosseum, it's Machu Picchu, Egyptian pyramids. What are the other two?
So I'm going to jump in. So it's weirdly, I thought it was the Egyptian pyramids, but it's actually not because these are the new wonders.
Oh, those are the ancient ones.
Yeah, so you got the ancient ones. So so the trip would have been the Great Wall of China, Taj Mahal.
Right. Chichen Itza?
Chichen Itza, yeah. That was the final destination. Machu Picchu, the Colosseum, Jordan in Petra, and then the Christ the Redeemer in Brazil.
In Rio. So, wow, that's like mind-boggling to comprehend. And so they set all this up, and I'm gonna hand the reins off to you and let you tell your story. But they settle this up and they say, okay, you can get to the Great Wall of China, but once you touch that, the clock starts.
Yeah. Yeah. And Guinness World Record rules, just to paint the picture, I always think, right, that these Guinness people, they're just drinking Guinness 24/7.
Yeah, why not?
You know, and they're creating these world records and whatever.
They just have like a pub and they have a big book.
Yeah, they're just getting blind drunk, right? They don't even care whether they do the record or not. They're just all drunk drinking Guinness.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought. But as it turns out, these people are like the hardest nosed, you know, people you've ever met. And the evidence you need for Guinness is just insane. So we got to make sure I had a tracker going. So the whole time, you know, I'd have to set off points every single time I joined a new piece of travel. The wonder, everything. You had to take a gazillion photos. You had to film every like 10 minutes. Wow. So the list is just endless. So, but in a way, you think, well, if you're going to do it, there's no way you can cheat the system. And so that's why they exist. And so it works, right? You know, I've done enough now that you just cannot beat the system. You've really got to break the record and you've got to do it, you know, properly how they say how you do it. So we started off in China and got up there. It was like, right, we'll go down in a cable car. They're like, well, today the cable car is being, you know, cleaned, you can't use it. We're like, what? You're gonna be kidding me. And then this guy in Chinese, his English was not good at all, but he said toboggan. I'm thinking, I don't really know what a toboggan is, but sprint across the wall. And then there was these like cars that basically just race down at like 40 miles an hour to get you down because the Great Wall was up at the top of the mountain. So then I absolutely just flew down and made it down the bottom to then jump in, you know, the taxi just to get the record started.
Everyone knows what they say about fish stories, but this one is true. A while back, I was mountain biking along the Arkansas River near a place called the Big Dam Bridge. In the distance, I could see the afternoon sun falling over Little Rock's lone round peak. Beside me, I saw a tranquil, rippling pool next to an old railroad bridge, secluded from the rapid river's flow. It was exactly the kind of spot that I'd biked there for. So I hopped off the bike, reached into a backpack, and pulled out a fishing rod. Then I spent the rest of the afternoon watching time slowly roll by in the warm afternoon sun. I even caught a few fish right there in that spot, with my bike laying on the ground and the shallow sand beneath my feet. This is the kind of fishing story that doesn't have a big catch or a record bass attached to it. was just a peaceful afternoon by the water, the kind that helps you unwind from all of the problems in life. If you listen to this podcast, chances are you've got a nose for adventure yourself. And if that nose leads you to the water, I suggest picking up a tool that can help you enjoy more moments like these. When I travel, I often pack a fishing rod, and though many portable options abound, I like the rods from Wisconsin's St. Croix rods the best. St. Croix's Avid Trek and Triumph travel rods break down into a case that fits in a backpack, or an overhead bin, or behind just about any car seat. They're designed in the USA and made with care from a family-run company that knows some fishing stories don't require any exaggeration. Sometimes, just being on the water is enough. You can learn more about St. Croix's travel rods at stcroixrods.com, and you can tell them the Get Lost podcast sent you. Now, back to the show. My jaw is on the floor right now. I know you guys can't see that, but like the idea of taking a toboggan from the top of the Great Wall of China down a mountain and then kickstarting your world record journey is insane. And that's real adventure man stuff.
Yeah. And then, so then the next part of the journey. So yeah, went to India. Now I've never been to India before and the country always fascinated me. But the schedule was just so tight. I mean, I thought I was going to have a holiday. Yeah, Joe, right. I really did. Right? I thought, yeah, it's great. I'm going to have 7 days here, you know, on this record. But it just wasn't like that. Like I literally had to run to every single place. And if you weren't kind of running, you were then planning and trying to work out the next protocol. But
how are you getting from China to India? Because it sounds like something people in their mind were like, oh, we just hop on a private jet. But I don't think that's the case.
No, it had to be economy class. So, yeah, couldn't take the jet. It did cross my mind.
Yeah.
You know, if travel port are paying. But, no, it was economy all the way. And so, you know, I survived off a lot of plain food, really. And when I got to India, I didn't really want to eat the food either because I didn't want to get, you know, sick. You just can't afford to get a stomach bug or anything. You're doing a record.
Yeah.
And then I had to catch a train to the Taj Mahal, and then we had to catch a taxi, you know, a few miles. But the roads in India are just nuts. I mean, it's so busy. And so we're getting to the Taj Mahal, and I'm like, there is no way we're going to see the Taj Mahal and get back in time to jump back on the train. So we get to the Taj Mahal. I run in and get the photo. You have to get somebody as a witness to sign a piece of paper to say, yes, I have seen Adventure Man at the Taj Mahal. Uh-huh. And then I run back and get back into the taxi. And the taxi driver goes, what are you doing? You haven't seen the Taj Mahal yet.
Oh, no. They're offended because you haven't.
Yeah. And then I said, no, seriously, I've seen it. We need to go. And he said, what do you mean? He said, wow. He said, I've never dropped anyone off before the Taj Mahal. 10 minutes later, picked them back up.
So mind-blowing. Yeah, I can see why that would be crazy. And if you guys look at Forbes.com, you can Google Forbes and Jamie McDonald or myself, and you'll see the picture that he took at the Taj Mahal. It's like on the story that we wrote over at Forbes. But that'll give you a great visual of it. And we'll throw it up on our Instagram too for the show. So anyway, go ahead, continue the taxi.
Joe, you've done an incredible job on that story as well. It's a brilliant read. So yeah, definitely go and read it.
Thanks for that. Yeah, it's an easy, fun read. And it's always good to highlight some positive stuff. So you get in the taxi in India and the guy's like, okay, I guess I'll take you back now.
Yeah. So we get back and then I land at the train station late, right? 10 minutes late, something. Mm-hmm. I've missed the train. And it's like a domino effect. It's like if you miss one form of transport, then you don't make the next one and the next one. And suddenly, you know, the entire thing is in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And, but got to the train station, the train arrived late.
What luck. That's so lucky.
So jumped on the train and then just as we're leaving India, I mean, India was one of my favorite countries of all time. I was only there maybe 12 hours or something. But even to this day, just that experience alone, it's up on my top three, you know, potentially even number one. But just as I went to leave, suddenly saw this like group of monkeys at the train station just run over, or one of them ran over, grabbed this handbag from this woman, and then he ran back over with his monkey mates, right? Starts rummaging in the bag. And then they start like, you know, getting their food and everything.
Yeah.
And I was looking across, and I was so sleep deprived at this point. You know, I was already a couple of days in, but I hadn't slept a wink. And I'm looking across, and I can see this older woman like weighing up, like, am I going to get my bag back? And she's got this like walking stick. Oh, and man, you can see the look on her face. She's like, okay, I'm going to go for this. And then she runs over and then starts beating the monkey with this stick to get her bag back. I'm looking at it, Joe. I'm thinking, am I seeing one? Am I completely delirious? Is this a dream right now?
It sounds like a fever dream. If I saw that, to this day, I wouldn't know if that was real or not. Like, so the monkey, is there like combat going on? The monkey runs away. Like, does the monkey steal the stick? I feel like this could go a lot of ways.
Oh no. The monkey got his ass whooped by this old woman, and she got her bag back, and the monkeys didn't. That was it. They were done. They went off.
I mean, gave him a piece of Charles Darwin's mind. Look, we love animals, but come on, these are thieving monkeys here, literally.
So the adventure was crazy, and I probably slept about 12 hours in the space of 7 days. And it was more like I was dribbling as well. You know when you're sat up in the economy and your head's nodding and you're dribbling? Like basically that was 12 hours of that.
Your face is like slammed against the seat in front of you, and then that person decides to move their seat, and then there's someone kicking you from behind. It's fun. I love the economy travel. It's like I'm really lucky. Like, as a travel writer, a lot of times I'm flown places and things for coverage. It doesn't cost me anything usually. But yeah, a lot of times they stiff you in economy and you're like, oh, this is grueling because now I'm going to Africa in economy or South America. And it's like grueling to do that once. For you to do this back to back to back to back to back. And you're only on India. So as you look at, there's a map behind Jamie on this video call, but we're sort of going right to left. So he's in China, he's in India. And then the next stop after that is probably Rome?
No, it wasn't actually. So before Rome, it was Petra in Jordan. That's right.
So you get to play Indiana Jones.
Oh, this one probably surprised me the most because I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know it was a wonder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I got there, you know, there's this gorgeous valley in the desert again, back to the desert. I love the desert. It's just so beautiful. But this one was like this huge valley, and you have to walk a mile before you even get to the wonder. And on the way there, is, you know, because wonders, you know, it's very touristy, but I didn't feel like it was that touristy at all. And if anything, it was the opposite. And this guy come up to me very seriously and looked me in the eye, and he said, "Hey, mate, do you want to buy a horse?" Like, no, I think I'm okay, thank you. So,
I mean, at this point, you're just having a series of weird fever dreams.
Yeah. Maybe I was bitten by a mosquito at the start of this journey, and the whole thing is just not even real. Yeah.
What was the price of the horse? I mean, you know.
I didn't get to that point actually, but maybe I really should have. Maybe I should have said how much and then went to the wonder sitting on a horse.
Could have bought it and then sold it on the way back.
And made money.
Yeah. And saved time. So I love this description because I've always wanted to go to Petra, and it's, if you've seen Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, it's the famous place where they have the Holy Grail. It's mega, mega tourist site since that movie. But I've never been. So you're saying you walk up to it and you start on that journey and it doesn't feel overrun. It doesn't feel crowded.
It doesn't feel crowded. And the reason why is that it's, you know, you could walk around, you know, at least 2 kilometers around the site itself. And it's big, huge boulders. And the colors of everything goes from pink to purple. And, you can just wander anywhere you want around it. And the wonder itself was spectacular. And, you know, there were quite a few people around the wonder. But looking up, the part that you can't get your head around is that the way it's carved out is that there's no way you can get scaffolding to get up and in because of what's below it and everything to carve it out. So you're like, how back then, you know, like gazillion years ago, how did they go up and carve this entire rock formation? It's just like, you can't, it's like magic.
It looks amazing. If you Google Petra and the Treasury building, I think that's the one, there's a whole complex of buildings there. I've not researched this at all, by the way. I've not been daydreaming about going there forever. But you'll see, yeah, it is like the most detailed structure in the world, and it's just carved out of these sandstone cliffs. It's like really inexplicable. Do you feel like you had, even though you're only there a moment, do you feel like you have time to absorb that awe and wonder that each wonder is meant to give?
Yeah, absolutely. I think from doing lots of traveling, it for me, it's never been about the destination, right? It's about the journey, you know. But getting to the wonders, kind of flip that on the head, it was actually about the destination. Every time you got to a wonder, it was like your mind was blown. So all my traveling, that it's flipped that on its head. But I'm still a believer that you know you can soak it up in a very short space of time and enjoy it, absorb it. You know, would you absorb it all in 7 days? Might be a little bit kind of crazy for the brain to absorb. But yeah, I had about an hour at that wonder, and what it's done is it's made me just want to go back and actually take my kids there and see it through their eyes. So you know, yeah, amazing wonder.
Yeah, for sure. How do you pack for a trip like this? I mean, do you have like one pair of clothes, or you have like, you can't have much, right? But you have different terrains. It's cold probably in Machu Picchu. It's warm in Petra. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I had one backpack. I was wearing one superhero suit, and you know, I had a pair of clean undies.
Do you wear the superhero suit in the plane? Because I think that would be like ridiculous, but amazing.
Yeah, no, totally did. Yeah, absolutely wore the super. I mean, that was it. I wanted to pack light, and I didn't want to. You know, I couldn't put the bag in for check-in because that would be lost time. So,
oh my god, you'd be totally screwed.
Yeah, so I just had one tiny little backpack, and that was it, really. And one suit. So I was very good at kind of, you know, the Under Armour to keep the smells. Oh, yeah. Away. And aftershave, I bought some aftershave, put that on.
Did the passport control, did they ever give you any flack? Because they'd say, hey man, it looks here like you were just in China like 2 days ago, and then you were yesterday in Jordan, and like, what are you doing? Are you James Bond?
I did get a big challenge in Jordan. They basically nearly didn't let me on the flight from India into Jordan. And whether it was the superhero thing that kind of flagged it, but they discovered that I had a tracker. So mm-hmm. Once they discovered I had a tracker, they didn't want to let me on the flight. And so it got so close. It was like it even went slightly over the flight time, but luckily they didn't take off in time. So, wow. And then I was thinking, right, well, I've got on this flight, then got to Jordan, and suddenly, you know, basically if I checked in my bag with the tracker, then they accepted it. So when I got the other end, got where the belt was going, waited for my bag, didn't arrive. Then suddenly this official turns up, hey, come into this back office, and it's the army. You got a tracker? And I'm like, listen, I'm doing this record. And you know, when you're trying to translate that into their world, it just doesn't, and you're wearing a superhero suit.
Yeah, they don't take you seriously.
No. So it was a bit of a rough experience. So they didn't give me my tracker back. They said, you're not taking a tracker into our country. So yeah, so then I just had to explain to Guinness, look, we don't have a tracker, but I've got all this other evidence.
You document that. It with your, and your phone's geolocated and things like that.
Yeah, too. So we got that going. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And this tracker, I mean, in my mind, it's like a little Garmin thing that's about the size of your palm. But what does it look like?
Yeah, exactly that. That's a great description. Yeah. Just enough to look like 007.
Right. Yeah. I have a couple of those things from Garmin, or I did until they got stolen from my truck. But don't leave GPS trackers in your truck, people. But yeah, they do look like high tech thing. And it's not something that, I mean, unless you're in the outdoor world or the adventure world, you wouldn't know what it is. And it does look kind of like, yeah, high tech military stuff, which it sort of is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, you're like, am I going to be this person that's going to crack Jordan down with some information with my, you know, superhero suit and my tracker? I don't know. I think, you know, but they meant business. I mean, I didn't even think they were going to let me in the country.
So when you leave Jordan, do you get your stuff back?
Yeah. So then I went and picked it up just before we got on the next flight. And then that was it. Then we went off to Italy, to the Colosseum,
where you can finally eat.
Yeah, and I got straight on the pizza and pasta. Yes. Italians are my favorite food. You know, I love plain food, right? I absolutely love it. But you know, Italy was the first time I got some real decent, like incredible food, which was amazing. And then the Colosseum, I think is just the history of the Colosseum is just fantastic.
Had you been there before?
I've been there. That was the only wonder that I saw the outside of the building many, many years ago. So now seeing it for like properly being in there, and you think 50,000 people were like cheering on, like people battling to death. I mean,
it's insane.
Isn't it just insane?
Yeah, and the Colosseum is really, really big. It does. It looks big in photos, and you get in, you're like, oh, it is actually as amazing as it looks in photos. When you enter the Colosseum, or at least when I did, there were like these lines that kind of went around the building. Like there's always a line to get in. Were you able to like expedite any of that, or do you have to sit in the line with everyone?
I had to sit in the line, but it wasn't too bad. And again, I think that was down to the planning of the travel agent to make sure that things were timed. So every time I went there, it was like the quietest time, or it was planned so meticulous. I mean, it's a world record. If anyone wants to try this, it would be a really, really difficult one to break, because it was just militant, right? And it all went to plan somewhat. I mean, then when I left Italy, I ended up running to the wrong terminal and then missed a flight, and just quickly.
My God.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So I thought, oh, no. And I didn't want to look too far ahead. It was just too much for my brain. Mm-hmm. So in my world, I just felt devastated. I'm like, oh, no, is this it? Have I ruined the entire thing? But quickly picked up the phone to the travel agent and they got on the technology and was like, right here, get to this flight now. And then I managed to fly to Portugal and then on to Rio, then to the Christ the Redeemer.
You're making a strong argument for travel agents right now on our show. I feel
it's weird, isn't it? Because I've never used a travel agent. I've only ever used a travel agent for this particular adventure, and so now I kind of see the plus side and the stress they take out of your life.
But at this point, so Colosseum's behind, Petra's behind, Taj Mahal's behind, Great Wall. You're in the home stretch. You're in the home stretch of this. So you're going to Rio. There's the Statue of Christ is up on top of the city. And as you make your way across the Atlantic, do you feel like, oh my God, I'm like entering the home stretch of this? There's like three more to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. But I still didn't feel like I was going to make it, only because I felt a little bit powerless in all these things needed to go right still, and that kind of felt slightly out of my control. So I never once felt confident, if that makes sense. I was always kind of like, well, it only takes one flight to suddenly go, we've cancelled, and you're like, right. And if the rest of the travel doesn't align, then
I would think that it would make me more nervous to get towards the end of it and to see that goal and to think, oh my God, I could actually do this. And then you have to rely on airlines, which are so, like, they're a stress point for me. And it's a terrible job to be in because I really do get freaked out by security lines. I get freaked out by missing connections. I'm like a chronically early person. It drives my partner nuts. Like, so this would build pressure for me. But anyway, you land in Rio, and is this a new continent for you?
This is, yeah. And there was a taxi that was arranged. And it, just to give you, again, old Guinness people that don't drink much Guinness, you can only use a taxi for 50 kilometers, and then you have to get out and you have to jump on either another taxi or use a different form of transport.
Well, you'd have to, like, literally stop the taxi, get out and grab another taxi?
Yes, yeah. So it had to be 50 kilometers, you know.
Can you use, like, rideshare, like Uber and stuff like that?
You can use Uber, yeah. Yeah, okay. You can. You know, it just has to be like a public, you know, form of transport. So in the end, the taxi just didn't turn up, or was running late or something. So jumped into some random taxi guy whose name was Carlos. So he manages to go, and we get to the bottom of the mountain to go and see the Christ the Redeemer. And he said, right, can you help put the windows down? I have to turn off the aircon right now. And, you know, because I don't know if we're going to make it to the top. And I'm like, right, okay, Carlos. So I put the windows down, he turns off the aircon, and then we literally just chudder up to the Christ Redeemer. It's so steep to get up there.
I hadn't thought about that. It's not one I've been to. And yeah, it is up. So it's quite vertical to take the road up to it.
Yeah, it's not as bad as the cheese roll hill.
Yeah.
But
what if you'd have seen that man training? He's just running down.
Yeah, maybe he goes to the Christ the Redeemer to do some training.
Yeah. So you get to see that, and then it's on to Peru, I presume?
Then on to, Peru, to Machu Picchu.
Okay, so this one, for me, I'm sorry, I'm inserting my own excitement into your journey, because there's all these world wonders that I've never been to. So Machu Picchu for me would be just like Petra. It would be like so encapsulating and cool and engrossing and immersive. What was your experience like getting to Peru and then actually getting to Machu Picchu? Because it's kind of out there. Yeah,
exactly. The feelings that you have about it is what I had with it. And it was the longest trip of the whole record to get to, like, from the point of landing in the country. Mm-hmm. It was a hell of a mission with, you know, a bus, a train, a taxi, another train, a bus. It just kept going. And so it was a huge mission to get there. But, you know, it's like anything, isn't it? It's that journey, you know, and the longer it is, it's like it builds that anticipation. And when I got to the top of Machu Picchu, I have to say, it was absolutely breathtaking.
Mm-hmm.
You were like up in the clouds. I was looking down. It's got this weird vibe that you don't want to raise your voice. Like everyone talks really quietly. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like spiritual. It's mm-hmm. like unspoken. You just don't want to talk mm-hmm. in any way loudly. And for me, this was like the point of like being on top of the world. And then going, okay, you know that home stretch feeling?
Yeah.
For me, this was it. This was the moment of, okay, I've Machu Picchu. This is like a dream of mine. You know, one last leg now, and this is it.
And so you take like a deep breath while you're overlooking the ruins of this ancient city, and you say, hey, this is it. Like one more. I just got to get to Mexico.
Yeah. One more. And then, jumped on the plane, flew to Mexico, Chichen Itza. And on the final stretch, like, great, going to get here, you know. And again, we've got to film everything for Guinness rules and get to the gate. Suddenly they like take my camera and the audio and and I'm like, I need that back. They're like, no, because it's like this. You know, spiritual, you know.
You're saying like at Chichen Itza, they take all your stuff.
Yeah, they take all the stuff. And I'm, I'm thinking, hang on, what do I need for the Guinness rules here? Right. You know, I've got my tracker, but I think I still need to show that I'm there if there's no video footage or anything like that. So I managed to kind of go in, come back out, grab my stuff, and then like come in, and then this time like stuff my camera and the audio and like tuck it under. I'm like, they're never going to find it now. So I get back in then, and I didn't know the time. I wanted to hit under 7 days. The kind of rules was 8 days. But I wanted to hit seven because there is someone who, you know, Simon Wilson, who unofficially has done, you know, the wonders, and he'd done it in 7 days. I was like, if we don't do it in 7 days, it kind of, you know, even though we've done it officially through Guinness, everyone still might say, well, he's still done it faster. And so I just basically sprinted as fast as I could. And I couldn't even, I was so delirious. I was on no sleep at all. I didn't even kind of know how long it would be. But there was a camera guy at this point with us to try and kind of capture towards the end. And he said, Jamie, you know, he's like 6 days. I think it was like 18 hours or something. And, you know, you've done it. You've done it. And I just went absolutely ballistic and, you know, hands in the air. I saw Chichen Itza, which is this kind of pyramid. And I didn't know. I actually chose not to look at photos of Chichen Itza. So I didn't know what I was ever going to see. And then as soon as I looked at it, I was like, I know this place. And if you've ever watched the film with Mel Gibson's the director, Apocalypto. Yeah. You know where they like chop heads and then the heads roll down the pyramid? That's the spot. I was like, that's you. You're the wonder. So I love that film. It's such a brilliant film. And yeah, so it was just a really special finish. I got myself a beer, had a little dance.
Well deserved, I'd say, at that point. And a great country to grab a beer in. I mean, you go, it must have been an amazing array of colors and sounds and languages and smells that you encountered on this 1 week journey. I mean, do you look back on this and think your perspective of humanity has changed a little bit?
I think so. And what it made me feel at the end of it, you know, especially since, you know, not doing much traveling, because I'm not even going to even say the words of it. But I guess it left me with this feeling of, travel is back. Mm-hmm. It's well and truly back. And the world is tiny, right? It's absolutely tiny. It was a once in a lifetime trip. I'm never, ever going to do that again. And not that you ever would either, right? I mean, it was challenging. It was really challenging. But I would say you can never recreate those kind of experiences. You relish them for what they are.
Yeah. A couple of important footnotes as we kind of wrap up here. I wanted to talk to you about the Superhero Foundation. Because when I got the news about your journey, at first I thought, okay, Travelport is like this new travel app, and they send a guy around the world, and they're doing, I thought it was a Seven Wonders in 7 days package that people could book. But that's actually not the case, because it's absolutely insane. So you can't, you could probably try to do this on your own, but you can't just go book it. It's not like a cruise to Antarctica or something like that. But you were able to raise money for the Superhero Foundation on this trip, and I wanted to ask you about that. And you said previously that the hospital had built a playroom with some of the funds you donated in the past. Do you know how much you raised this time and where that's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, so a couple reasons why I accepted this challenge from Travelport. They kind of counteracted the carbon footprint of the trip, right. which was really important. And I also said, well, look, if we're going to do this, would you make a donation to my charity Super Foundation? There's a boy right now that I've been supporting for years. He's got cerebral palsy. They've run out of donations, and they need more physiotherapy to keep the pain out of his legs and keep him walking for the rest of his life. So it was, in a way, it was quite an easy sell, right? to
yeah,
them.
Yeah.
And I'm really, you know, I was blown away that they went and thought about it, and they said, right, well, we're going to donate $1 for every mile traveled. So it ended up over $22,000 that went to this boy, Archie. And after the adventure, I was able to, you know, drive to their house up the road with a check in my pocket. And they knew a donation was coming. They just didn't know how much.
Wow.
And I kind of went in there and I said, right, well, who wants the check? You know, and I was thinking the mum would say, oh, I'll have it. And Archie was like, no, give it to me. So he took the check and then read out, you know, the amount, and his mum started crying. And, you know, that is a completely life-changing amount of money for them. They never have to fundraise now, you know, for the rest of their life, which is a hell of a challenge. And they're a busy family. So, yeah, it was, that to me was like the icing on the cake.
I think that memory, for me, would even be more valuable than some of the personal experiences, because you get to help and you get to share, and it's not all about me or you. And I think that's a gift. With travel, I've been so lucky that all of this career that I have, writing for Forbes or Nat Geo or whoever you want to say, it all started because I was blogging for free. Just sharing my thoughts with people from the small town where I grew up with, really. And when I see people from there that are out in the world, adventuring and camping on their own and going places internationally that I feel like they might not have gone before or even thought about. I don't know that they're doing it because of me, but I like to think that maybe there's a small part that was like, hey, you know, if a kid from down the street can do it, then we can do it. But in your case, you're really helping a family out of a really difficult position. So I think that's so amazing. In the Forbes article, I talked a little bit about your other point here, the carbon footprint. That was a concern that I had. It's like, man, this seems pretty bad. But actually the numbers that we've been given are that the calculated carbon impact of your journey was 2,523 kilograms. Average flight from New York to London is about 986 kilograms of carbon. If you were to go to Perth, Australia from London, it would be 3,153. This is according to a German nonprofit called Atmosphere. Your trip was offset by Travelport, who worked with a company called Climeworks to remove the equivalent amount of CO2 from the atmosphere. And I believe they're doing that by carbon removal processes and also planting trees. But I just want to talk to you because you said travel is back. And I think it's important for people to know that there are a lot of ways to travel in which we can offset the carbon impact. And we should really think about that while we're gallivanting around the globe, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, most of the time when I travel, it's by bike or feet or anything, you know.
That's true. Yeah, your carbon footprint overall is significantly reduced.
Pretty low, yeah. Yeah, you know, but yeah, absolutely. If we just keep being conscious of the way we travel, and if we all just keep chipping in, you know, hopefully we can kind of make a difference doing that.
I think it's possible, and it's probably a topic for another episode with an expert on carbon footprints, but I just wanted to make note because one of the first things I thought about is, dang, that's a lot of carbon. But actually, it's probably a lot less than a cruise to Antarctica, or really a cruise around the Caribbean, I would say. So that's an uneducated statement, but I think it's probably true.
What I do want to say, Joe, is I think you're right earlier when you mentioned, you know, somebody potentially camping up a hill because they've read something you've done. I think you're right. I think by sharing adventure stories and travel is like throwing a pebble into a pond, you know, and it ripples out and it may touch someone you don't even know, right? You know, it may touch, you just don't even know, but I think you have to believe it. And, you know, when you share stories of travel, for me, I've done so much traveling over the years, and I have my like 18 years old, you know, I went off to Australia and New Zealand and probably just got way too drunk, and, you know, yeah. It was a great time and I got to see the world. But I think once you keep seeing the world enough, it's got to be more meaningful. So whether you're sharing stories or, you know, raising money for charity, whatever's like your mission, isn't it? And clearly, Joe, you've got your mission.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope so. I really get more out of showing places to people than me going in most cases. Although that early on, it was about me and I needed to find things within myself. And a decade in, now it's about, okay, I want to show this to someone else and illuminate their world. Jamie, thanks for coming on. Before I let you go, I do want to talk to you about your book, Anyone Can Be a Superhero. And you guys can go to adventureman.org and read a little bit more. But just tell us about your book and where people can find it. What's it about?
Yeah, I mean, if you just Google Jamie McDonald, everything will pop up. But yeah, you can buy it in most places, online, Amazon, you know, and anywhere really. And yeah, it's a pretty basic read. I mean, I'm dyslexic, so I really struggle to write. So it's basically as I speak. There's no fancy words in there. There's stories about, you know, breaking the world record on the static bike where I literally had to put honey on my butt, which saved the entire record. No, big total seriousness. So yeah, there's some stories in there and like what you said earlier, you know, hopefully it touches someone and it ignites them to, you know, take on their travel mission and their own adventure.
Yeah. I can't wait to read that because to me, honey is always sticky and it seems like a bad idea, but we have different bees over there. I don't know how it works.
Well, Joe, you're definitely not buying a book. I'm going to send you one. So I want your address after this. You are an absolute legend.
I accept. If we can get a copy or two for the listeners, and we'll raffle one off on our social feed so you guys can get involved. And also we'll fire back with a little bit of podcast merch. So, Jamie, thank you again for coming on the show. It gives me life to talk to other people that have traveled with meaning. Congratulations on your world record. And I hope we can talk to you again another time about some of your other adventures.
Awesome, Joe.
All right.
The Get Lost Podcast is a production of Sold Outside Exploration Company. Follow us on Instagram at Get Lost Podcast. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on your podcast app of choice.